First of all, I've told you many times before, I have a horror of presenting somebody a message that will lead them astray. I have an absolute horror of that. And I have a fear of God about it. So I've worked on that. And I came from a church that taught a lot of things that I understood. I've heard them, but I have never been able to get to the point where I felt like this is the way it is. And I guess the last link in the chain was the thing I always had problems with was why God, I didn't question why he did it, I didn't think, you know, he made a mistake or anything, but why after he has the trumpets, you know, after the trumpets, he has them laid out, he tells John, don't write this thing about the thunder. I thought, why would he do that? I mean, we're going to go through the whole tribulation. We're going to go down and why didn't he tell? Well, I have finally figured out, and I believe, that actually there's only two resurrections. There's just two. And it helped me. Finally, I came to grips with it. And I'm going to teach that on Sunday. I'm going to try to make it as clear as I possibly can, because I think I know now why he did it. And I don't think I could have possibly learned it by what I've studied and gotten out of books and schools and all that. I just don't think I could have gotten it out of that. I know that God meant for me to go to school. I know that. I'm certain of it. No question in my mind. But I think he did that so I could understand what I should have understood when I was younger. But I had a lot of other things on my mind. In any case, I'm going to let you see it, and I'm going to explain it. And I hope you enjoy it. And Lord willing, after December is over, I intend to go through the slides that I've made in Israel. I've done gobs of them over there. And I've spent a great deal of time trying to get guides that don't have any axe to grind, they're not atheistic, and they're not missionary Baptist, because the Israelis won't let a missionary Baptist church build on the Temple Mount. They won't. They won't let any Baptist church build on the Temple Mount. Matter of fact, it's pretty well known that they burned one of them down, and that was years ago. And every time this one, it was a Southern Baptist church, tries to get back on the Temple Mount, they pass a regulation and won't let them do it. The only church they have ever let build, and they wouldn't let them build on the Temple Mount, they built on the Mount of Olives, and they let them do that. And this church that did that paid them a great deal of money. And I never have been able to find out how much, but they built it there. And that's another reason I went to Israel. I wanted to see that. And I found a way to get down in there to see it. And it's a crack, runs right through the Mount of Olives. It's a normal fault. And I looked at that thing and I thought, now why? How does this connect with all this? I think I know. And I've talked to the Lord about it. I've talked about it for years to him. And a lot of people have had a lot of different ideas about this, but I've always been convinced that there was some reason that God had to tell John, don't write that. And I think I know what the reason was, and I've talked to God all this week about it, and I've got the okay from him to go ahead and do it, so I'm going to do that. And then next year, I'm going to show the places in Israel. Now, I want you to know before I show them, there's a lot of people that don't know their latus rectum from a baboon. And if you don't know what a latus rectum is, it's just a geological figure. But I had a lot of problems with having the order that the things were placed. And so I think you'll agree with it. We'll see. If you don't, and you can convince me, I'll sure change it, but I just feel that this is what I'm supposed to do, and I'd like to do it before I die. So if I die between now and Sunday, you'll know that I wasn't supposed to do it. But I'll be all right, because God knows I wouldn't do anything in the world to offend him or to get lead people astray. Let's take a look at Matthew. Did you leave a bug up here or something? You've gotten me into enough trouble today. Oh! I think it's time to pass these things out. There's just one sheet. You won't pass me. Don't you stand around back there and talk to somebody. I'm always hard on Kenneth because he's a softie.
You know what? You got the late 30.
Will you pass them out over here? What would your wife have done if I'd asked her to pass them out?
I were
dying. Would she? Oh, any prayer request? Let's remember, Mrs.
Shipley.
I'm getting old. What?
Shipley.
Miss Shipley. You see how bad off I am? I just can't hardly remember anything. And yet, this is crystal clear. The Bible's crystal clear to me. I just can't remember anything else. What now?
Why was it necessary for Judas to betray Jesus?
Because that was the way God decided to do it, and I'm sorry that that's the best answer I've got. And when I say God chose it to do that way, as far as I'm concerned, Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. He's God. And he called Judas Iscariot out because it was necessary. And he deliberately, he never let him take the Lord's Supper with him. A lot of the different accounts say he did, but I've checked out all those words, and he never let the Lord take a type of communion with him of any sort. So that's why I believe that he chose him. Now, I had one fella that came up. He came all the way up here. His name, I call him Fig Newton. You know him. He used to be your pastor. And his first name wasn't Fig, but I've called him that so long, like those Fig Newtons you eat. And he went all the way through, and then he wrote his thesis. Well, I know how to look at the things at the bottom and do all those little footnotes and stuff, and they grade on that. So he'd come up and ask me to help him with it. And his thesis was titled, Judas Iscariot Was a Saved Man. And he asked me, well, why do you, I said, where'd you pick that up? I said, I've heard a lot of things, but I've never heard that. He said, I can prove it. I said, all right, I'll read it. And I read it. No, it's just not true. I'm weird enough to believe just about anything sometimes, but that was totally wrong. And so I said, why don't you preach about the prayers, Paul's prayers, Peter's prayers? And if you go through there, there's lots of people, the way they pray and what they say and why they say it. And the seminary loves that kind of stuff. But when you go out on a limb and you say, Judas Iscariot was a saved man, he picked him because he had known from before the foundation of the world what Judas Iscariot would do. And Judas Iscariot had already made a decision, and God knew what decision he would make. But there's something that I believe that sounds kind of peculiar, but I believe that God, who is, says, take thy yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly, and ye shall find rest unto your souls, that of can be from or of, and for I've explained that before, but I believe that before the foundation of the world, God knew that the choice I would make. And he used that to determine ahead of time what he was going to have me do. And because I believe that to be true, I think that he only chose him because Judas Iscariot, he knew what Peter would do. But I think God operates on this principle. And this is hard for some people to accept it. It's not for me. And I think you'll see why it's not for me on hopefully this coming Sunday. But I believe that God knew that the devil would rebel against him. And God knows everything about it. I do not believe in a tulip theory. I am not a Calvinist, never will be. But I think that I know, and I'm going to have to stand before the judgment seat of Christ on this, but I'm ready. And if I'm wrong, I'll just have to be wrong. But I have always believed that there is only one God. I can prove that. And he says so. And he said it just plainly, no matter whether you know the Greek or not. And I've always just believed there's one God. And he said, is there any other God besides me? He says, I know not of one. And so there he is, and he's God. So whenever I have to believe, I don't have a choice in what I'm about to say now. I have to believe that there is only one God, and I have to believe that one God, according to Hebrews, as one of the main scriptures, but there are others, that there is only one God. And because you know, God has a lot of names, and those names appeared in a child in the manger, and that child in the manger was God himself. I doubt if there were any sheep or goats or anything else there, because of the time of the year and Jerusalem, they have already taken. I may forget things that are here or there, helter-skelter, but I don't forget the scriptures, and I don't forget the conclusions I've come to that I'm stuck with, and I'll die with probably, but I'm still willing to change. But I believe that this one God, and he gives his name in the first chapter of Genesis. I believe this one God is one God. That one God fulfilled three things that are offices in the Godhead. I believe he fulfilled the offices of the Father, of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. I can validate that. If you'll sit through a whole day with me, I can validate that. And I believe that God has always existed. He had to always exist because he created himself. No, I won't even say that. He was and is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And so what I'm going to talk about on this coming weekend is about, I talk to myself sometimes. I know a lot of people that talk to themselves. And when I'm alone, I talk to myself. And most of the time that I'm talking to myself, I'm talking to God. Most of the time, but part of the time I talk to God. I don't get any answer back. Don't expect any answer back. But I believe God has worked in me, and here's what I think about it. Could you possibly, or anyone possibly, be meek and lowly if he was the only God and said he was meek and lowly? I don't think that's possible. So if there was only one God, and I know he fulfilled those three offices, and he's still fulfilling them, I don't believe he could fake anything. I think God is really humble. I think God operates on the principle, I could be wrong. Now, that may sound weird, but who else would you talk to except yourself? And so that's what I think about it. What do you think? Well, you can see what I believe and why when it happened when I do this on Friday. And one of the things I found when I went to Israel all those times, I didn't go over there to impress people. I went over there because of the very question that you asked. There were certain things. I believe the Bible. I believe it is inspired. I believe that the first time I ever, what people taught me, I just believed it. And when I grew up, I believed what my grandfather said, and I believed what the preachers taught and the church I went to. And then as I've gone along in life, I've had to figure some things out that I didn't find any one of them taught the thing where he talked to himself. But I cannot get away, and I don't think I ever will, from the fact in Hebrews where he said that Jesus Christ was the same yesterday, today, and forever. And the tenses that are used in there are past tense. And then he lists about 12, 13, 14 reasons in there why that's true. And so I have to operate from that. But your original question was about Judas Iscariot. I think that shows how humble God is. I don't think there's anybody, any person that is as humble as God. And I don't think that... I think God took on the form of a man and came out of the womb of the Virgin Mary. But when he came out to the people and they were talking to him about it, your mother and brother stand at the back, and he said, "Who are my father? Who is my father? Who is my brother and my sisters?" And he asked them that question. They didn't have an answer for it. They didn't understand what he was talking about. So that's what I believe. I think that Jesus Christ actually is all the fullness of the Godhead. He is God. And I think that he has fulfilled all the things that he was supposed to fulfill. Now, I don't believe there's anybody that's more humble than God. And here he has all the power in heaven and earth. Now think about that. He has all the power in heaven and earth. All the power in heaven and earth. You say, "Well, what do you think?" I'll tell you what I think. I believe that. And I also believe in the Psalms that when it talks about me having a weak, a small, weak faith, or whatever you want to call it. I think God knows that he has all the power in the universe. I think Jesus knew he was God. But I think that he was God himself that created himself in the womb of the Virgin Mary. I don't believe she formed him. I believe that God formed himself. And I think there's nobody more humble than God. Nobody. What do you think of that?
It makes sense. It makes sense, he said.
Well, when you get a hard-headed preacher like you, and it says it makes sense, that means you're crazy. No, that's what I believe. And what is the one thing that God does not want to let Satan do? And that's what he does. And Satan, every time God did something, that Satan's main goal, he does not want God to have any glory at all. None. And he'll do anything in the world to stop it. You say, "Well, why did God let him do that?" Because it proved to me that God wants us to know when we get in heaven, when we're actually up there, he wants us to understand all this. And we're in the last days, and that's the only reason I'm going to present what I'm going to present this coming weekend, because I think I was supposed to do it. Do I think I'm one of the two witnesses? Heavens, no. Well, who do I think they are? They're two men that represent the church and Israel. And you say, "Well, what will they come from?" They'll come from a scriptural church that can't explain to me what all this is happening. And oh Lord, my grandfather thought when I was born that I could. He came down the day after I got out of the hospital. Mom got out of the hospital, and he brought me a little red wagon about like this, and you know, about that long, with pedals in it. He thought I should be able to, you know, pedal that thing. But there's been a long line of preachers in our work, in our family. There's a whole lot of people buried up there in graves that believe what I believe. Well, no, not exactly. But if they believe that you have to be saved before you can serve the Lord. Well, I guess I'll go ahead with this. Matthew 26, 46 through 75. But I hope you'll consider very carefully what I'm going to present. And Lord willing, after Christmas is past, because this will be the last chance I have to elaborate on it, I'm going to start showing the slides of Israel, and I'm going to do that for a very specific reason. My mind's going. Yet for some reason, all these things are coming back to me, and it's the only thing that I can remember, really. Like, I couldn't remember Sister Shipley's name. I couldn't. Why is it that I can't remember her name? But I can tell you that Jesus Christ is God Almighty. I can tell you and show you and prove to you that Jesus Christ is the Prince of Peace. I can prove to you that Jesus Christ is the Everlasting Father. And that's what I'm going to try to do this coming weekend. Because I think that God did it all. And I think that he was formed in the womb by himself. And I think he came forth as the Son of Man, called the Son of David, because David was a man after his own heart. And I believe the heart of God is meek and lowly. I do believe that. I don't think he thinks highly of himself. I think the rest of us do. I don't think you ever get over that. But when you get to heaven, I think a lot of these things will be clear. But somebody had to betray him. And you better believe that God knew who he wanted to betray him. And he wanted Judas Iscariot to betray him. But I'll say one thing about what I believe. It sure doesn't shortchange God at all. Anyway, Matthew 26, 46 through 75. Rise, let us be going. Behold, he is at hand that doth betray me. And while he yet spake, lo, Jesus, one of the 12, came, and with him a great multitude with swords and staves from the chief priests and elders of the people. Since I've kind of gotten off the subject here, but if I don't do this, I'll have to answer to God. And I'd rather answer to God than to you. And he's a lot more merciful than some of you are. He's certainly a lot more merciful than I am. Now, here's Judas Iscariot, and I'm just going to talk about this, plain talk about it, things I remember. Here he comes in with a great multitude with swords and staves from the chief priests and multitude of the people. When you examine Scripture, you don't have to go to a seminary. The only reason I went to the seminary was I wanted to be sure of what I was preaching, because I didn't want to stand before Christ and have to answer for preaching heresy. And you say, well, you didn't have to worry about that. I did. And I still do. And God lives inside me, and he's listening to all this, and he knows what I believe, and he's not bothering me one little bit for what I've said. That doesn't mean it's all correct, but it means it doesn't bother him. Now, it's interesting that he had a great multitude. If you want to understand the Bible, you've got to take what Matthew said, what Mark said. You've got to take what Luke said. You've got to take what John said. You've got to take each account, and you've got to look at it. And when you look at it, you have to answer this question. Or I do. I know this is inspired. So what am I supposed to learn from it? I learned what I'm about to say from the Lord. They came with swords, staves. Right now we've got a thing going on that irritates the fire out of me. We've got a situation where people that are Democrats in Congress are making a case to prove that a lot of them don't even believe that Jesus is God. They don't believe that there is a God. I've never seen anything like it in my life. I grew up with manger scenes. Now, I want to tell you something else about manger scenes. You think there was a goat there? You think there was a camel there? You think with all those things in a manger scene that were there? I don't. You say, well, what happened? I think the devil put them there. Why? Because it's confusing. It's very confusing because at the time of the year in Bethlehem, long before this, the shepherds had brought the sheep in and put them in enclosures inside the city of Bethlehem. So, what do you think of that? Well, you must not believe the Bible is inspired. I surely do. And I listen to everything it has to say, and he says, try me. That's what I've done. And you know what I see on that, in that, where they're underneath the place that wouldn't let them, didn't have room for them at the inn? I tell you what I believe there was. There was a baby. I don't believe he glowed in the dark. At least not then. I believe he glowed in the dark, or he glowed between the two witnesses that were standing on the Mount of Olives that represented the church and Israel. I believe God is light. I believe that God is eternal. God has always been eternal. Who created God? Who created God? God created himself. Then he began to do other things. Then he created the angels. And he made us a little lower than the angels. But one day we're going to judge angels. We're going to cohabitate with them. I don't. Anyway. Another thing. After this transpired, if you want to look at what really happened there and get all of it, I'm not saying this is not inspired. It is inspired. But after you read this one, go over and read what happened when they came out with a, after, go out and see what happened when this multitude first came in. Because it wasn't included by Matthew doesn't mean it didn't happen. It was included by another disciple. And Jesus didn't correct him. It was actually another one. And after all this, when the multitude first came in, Jesus walked over toward them. And did you know that? You say, well, why'd he do that? He wanted you to know he had all power in heaven and earth. He wanted me to know it. He wanted you to know it. He didn't want you to question him in any way about it. He wanted you to test him. That's what he did. And that's what he's doing. And that's what he's doing with me right now. You think it doesn't bother me when I find something that I know is going to cause me problems? God doesn't call a man that thinks God's going to give him problems and worries about it. Now, this thing about he said, they just fell backwards. Okay, so what do we have here? And when he yet spake, lo, Judas, one of the 12, came, and with a great multitude, they had a great multitude with swords and staves. Now, I could talk about this till the cows come home. But I don't want to try to impress you. I want to show you what I think and why I think it. And so, do you also know that after this episode was over, when they came into this great multitude came in and they walked up to Jesus. This was toward the very end. Do you think that the man showed up with two swords and a stave after it was all over and said, Lord, is this enough? What do you learn from that? What did you learn from it? What did I learn from it? Well, I'll tell you what I learned from it. I learned this. At the very end, and I think the one that ran off of them, here's what I think. I think that he did it. It is enough. It is enough. He had told them not to do anything. He had told them not to react to it. But then he said, okay, it is enough. So why do I believe that the Lord gave something there that seems to conflict? It doesn't conflict. God means for us to defend ourselves. We have a right to defend ourselves. You say, well, now, wait a minute. Whoa. Listen, this is something that my life depends on. This is something I'm going to be judged on at the judgment seat. And so sometimes when you've asked me questions and different things, I never told you what I actually believed, but I never lied to you either. So this is something that you're going to have to settle out for yourself. Well, how does that work? This principle has never changed. It was true in the time of Christ. They had athletic events. They had wrestling and different things. You ever hear the old expression, the best offense is a good defense? The best defense is a good offense. You ever hear that? Well, we have a right to defend ourselves. You say, well, now that fellow over there in, what's his name, Hoko or Bobo or Yo-Yo, That fellow over there that's given us all the trouble in North Korea, do we not have the right to shoot back if he shoots at us? Don't you believe a good offense is a good defense? Don't you believe that we need to build and protect and defend ourselves? God didn't mean for us to be a bunch of people that ran around and did whatever we wanted to do. And so I just leave it to God. And I go on from there. I think sometimes we deceive ourselves. We come to a point in life where we think, well, I think I've got this pretty well figured out. You know who's talking to you? A very meek man. Because I have a poor spirit. You say, well, I don't have a poor spirit. Maybe you do. I do. How do you think I ever came to the conclusion that God had to do it all for me? You say, well, it involved shedding the blood. That's what the seed was. That's what the seed is. And I'm going to let you out 5 minutes early. I hope I haven't confused you with this. I do not want a lecture when we get home. Look, why don't you know that I'm not leaving you? Why don't you understand that? I'd like to just go through here and tell you what each thing means and why he picked Judas Iscariot. I'd like to go through and go into great detail. How long do you think it took me to learn all this? This will be the first time I have ever presented it fully what I believe, and I'm going to do it. And if it hair-lips Egypt, it's just going to have to hair-lip Egypt. And if I lose every member of God in this church, we'll just have to do it. Because I'll have to do it. Not because I told you I'd do it, but because I love God. And I know why I love Him. Because He first loved me. You see, God taught me how to love. God taught me I was not something special. God taught me that I was poor in spirit. It says you are too. You say, but I've been saved. Well, I know. That's why he had to do that. That's why he picked Judas Iscariot. He knew what choice Judas would make. He knew what choice Lucifer would make. He knows everything in advance. But he does not take advantage of a person. And he's meek and holy and humble. How somebody could have all the power in heaven and still love him, love like he does. That's why I love him. He said, take my yoke upon you and learn of me. I didn't realize it was going to cause me to learn how meek and lowly he is, and he really is. But it makes me realize I owe him everything, everything, and he owes me nothing. You know what you're supposed to learn to do? You're supposed to learn to be a bondservant. That's what you're supposed to do. That's why I put that thing in there about the servant that came back to his master, and he thought so much of his master and loved his master so much, he pierced his ear, wanted him to pierce his ear and keep him forever. The man's time had run out. He had already fulfilled his bondage. I want to be a bondservant. I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy to be a bondservant. But I'm going to get to go to heaven because of what Jesus did. Not what I did. Absolutely. Only the poor in spirit will go to heaven. Because they're so poor in spirit, they have to trust God. And when they learn who He is and what He is, and that He's meek and lowly, they don't want to serve Him. but I know that I'm not worthy. I know that. I could go to all the seminaries in the world. I could be the smartest man who ever lived. I could be anything. I could be all powerful, but I'm not all powerful. I'm a very meek and lowly servant. And that's all I'll ever be. And that's all I want to be. Not worthy, but we now have 55 seconds. Would you dismiss us?